I appreciate that good speech by Derek. Now, I don't agree with what he says, but you've got to admit he covered a lot of ground there and made a lot of arguments. It's going to be almost impossible for me to cover everything that he did, but I'm going to do my very best. You can start my time. First, I think this is his number one argument, and almost everything flows from this. And he said the same thing in his debate with Ron Helbrook several months ago. If God has not repealed it, it's still binding today. Meaning, if it's in the Old Testament, unless it's specifically repealed, it's still binding. Like we find circumcision is specifically repealed, right? So we know it's not binding. But if it's not mentioned as being repealed in the New, Derek's going to say it's still binding. I don't think he's going to be consistent on that. I don't think he's right about that. That's the main thing. For example, if we turn to Matthew 22, you might have to turn to your Bibles. You look at verse 23 through about verse 28, the Sadducees present a dilemma for Jesus. We have what's called the Levirate marriage law. Okay? Now, I have three brothers, Hunter, Ben, Pat, and Chris. Right, Wesley? Hunter, Ben. If the Levirate marriage law in the Old Testament was if Hunter marries my oldest brother and he dies before he has any children, then Ben has to marry his widow. And if Ben dies, I have to marry that widow. And if I die, Chris has to marry that widow. That was specifically in the Old Testament law that's never repealed in the New Testament. Now, Derek, when you get back up here, tell us if the Levirate marriage law still applies today that I have to marry my older brother's widow because it's never specifically repealed. You know, the Bible talks about many cases, and Derek knows this, about how we're not under the Old Testament law. Not under the Old Testament law. Galatians 5:4, if you try to be justified by the law, you're falling from grace. But did you know that it also talks about how we're under the New Testament law? And by no stretch of the imagination, Derek, is Deuteronomy 24:1 part of the New Testament law. Let's look at some of those passages in the book of Hebrews. John, you see my reading glasses? You bring them up here to me. Take your time, but I'm going to have a hard time reading. I'm just turned 63. Everybody turn to Hebrews chapter 9, verse 15. Now, we have a lot of passages saying we're not under the Old Testament law. He's talking about the whole law. It's not a matter of some of it, some of it's still going, the part that's not repealed. But there's some passages that talk about how we're under the new. Verse 15 of Hebrews 9. For this cause he is the mediator of the New Testament. Back exclusively New Testament, brethren. That means none of the Old Testament law is still binding. Even the parts that are not specifically repealed are not binding today because Jesus is the mediator of the New Testament. Now, why did Derek say that? Again, it's because he's trying to bring forward Jesus' teaching in Deuteronomy 24, 1 through 4, which I have to admit, a woman was put away for uncleanness and she could remarry and stay in that marriage. I admit that. He said, well, it's not been repealed. That's not the issue because it's not part of the New Testament. This says New Testament. How about Hebrews 7, verse 22. By so much was Jesus made a surety of a better testament. So 15 says New Testament. This one says better testament. Does anybody here, and I'm not really asking you to raise your hand, but does anybody here think Deuteronomy 24:1 is part of this new and better testament? No. To be part of this New Testament, you have to read about in the New Testament. So what's been repealed is everything, whether specifically mentioned or not, because these verses are saying we're under the New Testament law, not any part of the Old Testament law. Not any part of it, not even the Patriarch, the Psalms, the Proverbs, nothing, because we're under the New Testament. Now, notice Hebrews 7:12, the argument that's being made. I don't have a lot of time here. For the priesthood being changed, there's made a necessity to change also the law. Now, what's the argument the writer of Hebrews is making? Jesus is our priest, not only that, our high priest, but he can't be a priest if the Old Testament law is still binding, because he was from the tribe of Judah, verse 14, not Levi. Now, here's the argument, verse 12. Well, the only way he could be a priest is if the priesthood changed. And then he says, because of that, there's made a necessity to change also the law. What is he saying? You can't just bind one part of the law. We're under the New Testament law exclusively. That's the whole argument here. If one law is changed, then the whole thing is changed. That's the argument that's being made in Hebrews 7:12 and Galatians chapter 5, verse 3. Now, I just mentioned a while ago, tried to quote it. I'm sure I didn't do it well. Galatians 5:4. But Galatians 5:3 says, for I testify again to every man is circumcised that he's a debtor to the whole law. What's the argument? Same thing. If you try to bind one part of the old law, like Deuteronomy 24:1, Derek, then you have to bind the whole thing to be consistent. It's all or nothing, brethren. It's all or nothing. Either you bind all the old law or none of it. It's not the things that have not specifically been repealed are still binding. No, it's none of the Old Testament law is still binding. That's the argument in Hebrews 7:12. That's the argument in Galatians 5:3. We're under the New Testament law exclusively, just like Hebrews 9:15 and 7:22 say. Now, one more passage in the book of Hebrews. I should have read this while I was there. Hebrews 10, verse 9 says this. Then said he, lo, I come to do thy will, O God. He taketh away the first, that he may establish the second. What? Did he just take away part of the first? Or all of the first? That he may establish the second. That's the New Testament law. He took away all the Old Testament law to establish the new. The second covenant, or testament, does not include Deuteronomy 24:1-4. It does not apply today. One more passage. I'm spending too much time on this already, but I want to drive it home. Matthew 5:17-18. If you've ever discussed with the Seventh-day Adventists, you'll know they'll use Matthew 5:17-18 to try to prove we're still under the Sabbath for some reason. Because it says the very opposite. Matthew 5, here's what Jesus said in verse 17 and 18. If I can get there. Think not that I am come to destroy the law and the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For verily I say to you, till heaven and earth pass, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled. What does that say? Jesus in verse 17 says, I'm coming to fulfill the law. Then he says in verse 18, none of it's going to pass until I fulfill it. Well, did he fulfill it, John? He did. He fulfilled it, or he's a liar. So he fulfilled it. Now, what's implied by verse 18? He said not one jot or one tittle will pass till he fulfills it. That implies once it's fulfilled, every jot and every tittle will pass. If not one jot or one tittle will pass till all be fulfilled, once he fulfills it, that would imply every jot and every tittle, including, what's critical to this discussion, including Deuteronomy 24, verse 1, it's passed because Jesus fulfilled the law. Let me see if I can bring up a chart here. Yes. Derek brought up 1 Timothy 4, verse 3, forbidding to marry. Let me ask you, is it wrong to forbid eating meat? It doesn't just say forbidding to marry, it says forbidding meat eating a meat spare. Is it wrong to forbid eating meat to a man who won't work? 2 Thessalonians 3:10. No, so it's not forbidding eating meats under all circumstances. Is it a sin to discourage? Exactly, is it a sin to discourage the eating of meat that has been laced with arsenic? No. No. So this is not saying anytime you forbid meat, it's wrong. For example, Mark 6:18, was John wrong for forbidding Herod's marriage to Herodias? He was forbidding a marriage. That wasn't wrong. He's doing the right thing. Derek agrees with me. Homosexual marriage is wrong. Is it wrong to forbid that marriage? Is that what 1 Timothy 4 is saying? It's wrong to forbid marriage? You can't forbid a homosexual marriage? What about a polygamous marriage? It's almost like Derek waffled on this, but he finally said polygamous marriages are wrong. Would it be wrong to forbid a polygamous marriage? No. Deuteronomy 7:3, which we referred to when we were talking about Ezra, God forbid the Israelites from marrying from these seven foreign nations. Was God a devil for forbidding marriages to non-Israelite women? No. So obviously then, 1 Timothy 4, verse 3 is talking about forbidding scriptural marriages, not unscriptural marriages, not unlawful marriages. For example, what the Catholics do when they forbid their priest from having the first scriptural marriage to an eligible woman? They're forbidding a scriptural marriage. That's the kind of thing 1 Timothy 4 has to be talking about, not forbidding an unlawful marriage. I know you have to agree with that. So Derek didn't mean to make this argument, but he's really doing this, but he's really making an argument he doesn't even really believe. He's not being dishonest, definitely not accusing him of that. But he said, you're forbidding marriage. He forbids marriages. He admitted he forbids polygamous marriages, gay marriages. God forbade, he said, God forbade marriages to people from other nations, Deuteronomy 7. God forbade Herod's marriage to Herodias because it was incest, according to Derek. So, he doesn't believe his own argument here. I think you can see that. Here's Luke 16:18 at the bottom of this chart, the second part. Whosoever marrieth her that is put away from her husband committeth adultery. Now, both parties in this case are unmarried, as far as we know, but he still says if she marries, that put away woman marries, she commits adultery. Derek, is God forbidding that marriage? When he says if she remarries, it's adultery, isn't he forbidding that marriage? Why? It's not a violation of 1 Timothy 4. He's forbidding it because it's an unscriptural marriage, just like a gay marriage or a polygamous marriage is. Then Derek said, I said he waffled on this. I don't mean that in an ugly way. He said, Esau had three wives. He said that was wrong, but God allowed it. Well, I don't think it was wrong in the Old Testament for them to have polygamous marriages. I don't think that was wrong, but I understand that we may disagree on that. But I wanted to, my notes were, was Derek saying polygamy is okay today? Has that been specifically repealed? Later I found out he didn't. It sounded like he was saying polygamous marriages are okay. But later he said it wasn't. Now let's look at 1 Corinthians 7, verse 2, to show that polygamous marriages are not okay. We're only going to spend a moment on this because Derek said later polygamous marriages are not okay today. Nevertheless, to avoid fornication, 1 Corinthians 7, 2, let every man have his own wife, let every woman have her own husband. So polygamous marriages, I think, were allowed in the Old Testament, but they're not allowed anymore. And then Derek brought up Matthew 19, verse 6. That's an interesting passage. Let's turn there to Matthew 19, verse 6. It says, what God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. Now, Derek's right. Not all marriages God joins. He's only telling us not to separate, as the newer translations put it, not to separate or put asunder, tear apart, marriages that God joins. He doesn't join together gay marriages, polygamous marriages, incestual marriages. He doesn't join them together. Derek's right about that. What about adulterous marriages? Does he join them together? Why does he not join homosexual marriages and incestual marriages and polygamous marriages? Why does he join adulterous marriages? You have to clarify that for us. Now, he mentioned about marrying a non-Christian, and I happen to agree with Derek that it is wrong to marry a non-Christian, but he does join them. They violate his word, and then he joins them. And you know that because of 1 Corinthians 7, verse 12 and 13. But to the rest speak I, not the Lord. If a brother hath a wife that believeth God and should be pleased to dwell with him, let him not put her away. And the woman which hath a husband that believeth not and be pleased to dwell with her, let him not leave him. So, he does tell us not to marry non-Christians in passages like 1 Corinthians 9, verse 5. But when you do, he says you've got to stay You got to stick with your choice. You're stuck with what you chose. And here's the difference between that and adulterous marriage. You marry a non-Christian, you sin when you married that woman. But there's no ongoing sin. There's no adultery. You can tell that from the very next verse, verse 14. Your children are not illegitimate. God binds, joins that marriage together. Okay? So that's the difference between marrying a non-Christian and an adulterous marriage. Now, remember, Derek's main argument is if God did not specifically repeal it, then it's still binding today. And he applied that to Deuteronomy 24:1. But let's notice, really, Derek, he does specifically repeal Deuteronomy 24:1. Let's notice that. Turn in your Bible to Matthew 19. I've been camping on Matthew 19, verse 9. But you notice what he said in verse 8. Here's Matthew 19, verse 8, leading to verse 9. Here's what Jesus said. Moses, because of the hardness of your heart, suffered you to put away your wives. But from the beginning, it was not so. What's he talking about? He's talking about Deuteronomy 24:1. Don't you agree, Derek? Moses allowed them to put away their wives, but from the beginning it was not so. And he says, and I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. And whoso marrieth her, which is put away, doth commit adultery. What's the point of Jesus there? In the beginning, they couldn't get divorces for anything less than fornication. But he said, Moses, because of the hardness of your heart, allowed you to do it. You're right there. Uncleanness has to include more than adultery there, because adultery is your stone. Moses, God allowed it because of the hardness of your heart. But the point Jesus is saying, God's not going back to the beginning. He's contrasting his law on divorce and remarriage, Matthew 19:9, with what Moses allowed in verse 8. Derek, you see that? Verse 8, he's saying this is what Moses taught, but we're not going to allow that anymore. Just like in the Old Testament, you had to be circumcised, but we're not saying that anymore, specifically repealed. Y'all see that? Verse 8, he's saying this is what Moses taught. He allowed divorce because of the hardness of your heart. We're not going to do that anymore. We're only going to allow it for fornication. He specifically repeals Deuteronomy 24:1. He does the same thing in Matthew 5 in the Sermon on the Mount. Turn to Matthew 5 and let's read Matthew 5, 31 and 32. Derek, see if you can get this point because it's very important considering the argument you made. In Matthew 5, 31 and 32, Jesus says, it hath been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a right of divorcement. John, what's he quoting there? He's quoting Deuteronomy 24:1. Isn't he, Derek? Then he says, but I say to you, that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery, and whosoever marries her that is divorced commits adultery. Jesus is quoting Deuteronomy 24:1. This is what Moses said. This is what God's law used to say, but I say to you, I'm changing it. He specifically changes the marriage law of Deuteronomy 24:1-4 in both Matthew 19:8-9, specifically, by contrasting his New Testament law on divorce and remarriage with what Moses taught, allowed because of the hardness of her heart. He does that in Matthew 19:8-9. And he does that again in Matthew 5:31-32. He quotes Deuteronomy 24:1, almost word for word in Matthew 5:31. And then he says, but I say to you, it's going to be different under my law. Y'all see that? Now, Derek said, you see, David had this marriage to Bathsheba, committed adultery with her, had her husband killed, and then married her. And that was sin. He suffered penalty. And so it was a marriage that God didn't approve of, but he allowed it anyway. And so Derek's saying, well, then we have marriages today that are adulterous, but God allows it anyway. Let me ask you a question. Anybody that agrees with Derek, what would have happened if David had married Bathsheba and Uriah had not been killed, still alive? Then would God have approved of that marriage and allowed him to stay in it? He wouldn't. Right, Derek? He would not have. So the reason David was able to stay in that marriage with Bathsheba is because Bathsheba's husband was dead. She was not bound to Uriah anymore. If she had still been bound to Uriah, if he had still been alive, then Derek would agree with me that it would have been sinful for David to marry Bathsheba if she was still married to Uriah because he was still alive. So really, by bringing that case up, Derek, love you, Derek, you just admitted my case in this debate. Unless you think that if Uriah was still alive, David could have married Bathsheba with God's approval and stayed in that marriage. Unless you think that. Because the case you brought up, Uriah was dead. And I've already said, if a woman's husband dies, she's allowed to remarry. But when you agree with me that if Uriah had still been alive, that God would not approve of that marriage between David and Bathsheba, then you're admitting my case. That if a person's spouse, original spouse, is still alive, they're bound or obligated to that spouse as long as they live. If you marry somebody else, God does not approve of that. And Derek's the one that brought this case. If Uriah's husband has still been alive, Derek would agree with me that David's marriage to her would not have been approved of by God. That's exactly what we're saying is true under the New Testament law. And then Derek brought up John chapter 4, Jesus' encounter with the woman at the well. Let me see if I can find the right chart here. Back. So the woman at the well had five husbands, and the sixth was not her husband. Am I remembering that right? John 4. Derek said, so it's called a marriage. Therefore, all those marriages, maybe they weren't according to pattern. They wouldn't have been right, but God approved of them. Just simply because she had been married 5 times, he called it a marriage. But you've already said and agreed with me that Herod had married Herodias. It said he had married her. But that doesn't necessarily mean God approved of that marriage. Didn't Herod, I'm asking everybody, didn't Herod marry Herodias, her brother Philip's wife? Married her. Did God approve of that marriage? According to Derek, no. He said it's because of incest. But that doesn't really matter. Why? He's married to her and God does not approve of it. So when you bring up John 4, just because of the fact she had 5 husbands, that doesn't mean God approved of all those marriages. That just means God, she was married 5 times and God didn't approve of any of them properly except the first one. Jesus doesn't say that he approved of it, but I'm assuming he only approved of the first one. He doesn't say. But you can't just assume he approved all 5 of them because you didn't assume that when Herod married Herodias, they were married. You didn't say, you said that was not approved of by God. So let me bring up number 50. I think this is important for everybody to think about. I've only got 38 seconds. I'm going to quit 30 seconds early. I went overtime last time by at least 30 seconds.